By Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 94. New York Times Soap and Deb covers the NBA, culture, other things over there. Joining us, one of my favorite guests. I haven't talked to him on a podcast since, I believe, the Celtics blog podcast I used to do back in 2020 before the bubble. Oh no, he was on Dome Theory then, talking about Kyrie Irving, his protest of the bubble. Bubble concerns. Those seem like forever ago now. I guess they're over 2 years old. So he's back. We're talking Ime Udoka, his suspension. One of the weirdest stories I've ever seen. Woj's smiling face breaking the news on that goofy graphic on Wednesday. And he had Shams reporting following it up. They're battling a little bit. The relationship, improper, however it was described, it becomes a characterization of it. Some people question whether the Celtics overreacted, whether the punishment was right. Some follow-up details make it seem more reasonable and possibly more severe here, and that leads to a bunch of other questions that the team hasn't been able to answer because of privacy, other concerns. I'm torn on all of this, mostly disappointed. Soapman had some interesting perspective on it here in terms of the importance of coaching and whether we're maybe overrating this loss for the Celtics. I found that interesting, especially since on the Garden Report, we've really been concerned about this loss here. And I think temperamentally, knowing this team, that this is going to have an impact on them. We heard it yesterday at Media Day. If you haven't listened to those interviews yet, you should check them out on the CLNS Media YouTube page. This interview, of course, all our interviews on Dome Theory are available over there, video versions. We are brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is your number one source for news, odds, info, matchups, trends. It's all there on their great website. So smooth to operate. The NBA's back now. Media Day. Football underway 3 weeks in. Tough betting week. Week three. Those lines were just killers, but you can always bounce back and find out what is going on this week over at BetOnline.ag. You have baseball, of course. You have futures for football available. Futures for the NBA before the season actually starts going. Despite Ime Udoka's suspension, looking at the championship odds on BetOnline, Celtics still in the mix, though they've fallen behind the Warriors, who are now favorites at plus 575. Celtics plus 600. Bucks plus 700. Nets way up there now, plus 750, tied with the Clippers at plus 750. Suns, Sixers, Nuggets behind them. You got football this week coming up, starting with Thursday night. It's a short wait between football days now. And Thursday night's matchup this week is going to be the Dolphins and Bengals. Not bad. Bengals 3.5-point favorites. That's intriguing to me. Why are the Dolphins underdogs, despite their 3-0 start to this season? They're on the road. They had that humidity advantage against the Bills. Maybe they think that's going to turn. Tua wasn't great after that phenomenal game a couple weeks ago. All of this, including Sunday's games, are available on BetOnline, your continued source for all your sports wagering information, live betting, free contests, and live scores, as well as giveaways all season long. You got MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, golf, all available, all the information. Even if you're just looking for that information, the favorites, the odds, the spreads, it's at betonline.ag. Go over there and get 50%. Welcome bonus on your first deposit. You know our code, CLNS50. That's CLNS50. Support CLNS, Dome Theory, Garden Report, and more, as we prepare to cover this season in full, Celtics and the NBA. We're, of course, brought to you by Athletic Greens as well over on the Garden Report, athleticgreens.com/garden. It's one powder you put in your water every morning, 75 vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, vitamin D. Starting to feel a little scratching throughout this season. You're going to need these things to keep you healthy, keep you in shape, keep you energetic throughout your day. Tastes great, easy. And it's got these cool packaging if you sign up for a month subscription there. We'll even send you a phenomenal t-shirt from the Garden Report if you DM your receipt to John_Zanis. And we're offering that as well now for our other sponsor, Calm. Calm.com/garden. 40% off a premium subscription of Sleep Sounds. You also get yoga, meditation, bedtime stories. Tons there, and you get it all for 40% off their full library over there. This is Dome Theory number 94. Get us anywhere you get podcasts, as well as on our YouTube channel. Please subscribe. Please rate, review us and the Garden Report. Helps a ton over on the iTunes side. And, of course, we're on Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Here is, from the New York Times, talking Ime Udoka, Sopan, Deb. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 94. Welcome back, old friend of the show, Sopan Deb, from the New York Times. Great to have you back, Sopan.
Thanks for having me, man. Always a pleasure.
Not much else going on in the NBA. Well, there's actually a lot going on in the NBA world right now, especially on an organizational controversy level. Multiple teams going through that right now. But we're going to focus on the Celtics. Ime Udoka suspended for 1 year. I found this story fascinating, the coverage of it interesting, and, of course, there's major implications on a team that was and still is, I guess to some, an NBA championship favorite here. This is unprecedented in my mind. I have never seen a coach, a front office member suspended by their own team. This wasn't an NBA matter. This was the Celtics going through a law firm investigation, finding results, keeping them private, and suspending Udoka in a pretty public way. Now, we can get into the leaks and this and that about how it played out and how it was handled by the team. But I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the coverage of it and overall just your first impressions of everything that's gone on here, even though we still don't know a lot.
Well, I hesitate to say too much because there's a lot that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing that we don't know is what exactly the suspension is for, right? We don't actually know. We don't know the specifics. All we know is that there was a law firm brought in to investigate the allegations. What the allegations were, we don't know. We also know that there were multiple violations, as Grausbeck and Brad Stevens said. So we don't know who's involved here. It's not uncommon that a company would, you know, opt for privacy and say, hey, we're not going to say much. Basketball teams are just a little different because NBA teams are a little different because they're so forward facing. I mean, the coaches have to get press conference, you know, after every practice, and, you know, players have to talk to the media. And so it's a weird position that they're in, but, it's not that unusual for us to not know about the results of such an investigation. We just don't know anything. We don't know exactly what happened with Udoka.
Yeah. So I want to get into how this has flowed, right? So it leaks through Woj. He's the first one to announce the story. It's vague. It's just, you know, significant punishment possibly coming, violation of team rules. So everyone's saying, oh, did he may get in a fight at practice? Is he the next OJ? Like, it could have been anything in between. So next day, I believe shortly after in the morning, is when Shams comes through and says it was an improper consensual relationship in the workplace. And that sort of dictated the reaction to that. And that's sort of the leak that everyone's trying to figure out, right? Where would that have come from? Celtics deny it. I guess it could have been Udoka trying to get it in front of it and spin it his way, although he pretty soon after that came out and accepted the punishment. Doesn't really seem like he's fought this all that much from what we know. So that's the one that's perplexing, because Shams' follow-up reporting from there sort of indicated that this might not have been consensual. So it starts with people debating, all right, is any kind of workplace relationship acceptable, and is that rising to the level of a year-long suspension, or is there something more here? And that something more still hasn't become super clear, but some people said if there was any
relationship here whatsoever that's improper and was warranted of maybe even firing.
Mm-hmm. Well, without getting into any specific reporters, I think that the notion of power dynamics and consent in the workplace are relevant here, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to speculate on who leaked to who when, because we just don't know, and it would just be pure speculation. I did find it, and as I said publicly, I found it quite disconcerting how much certain figures on ESPN, particularly Stephen A. Smith, were openly talking about this as a consensual relationship, as if that was established fact. You know, even leading into the Odoka press conference, the press conference by Brad Stevens and Celtics ownership, and coming out of it, and we don't know if this was consensual. You know, we don't know what the parameters are, and I just think there's been a lot of speculation about that without actually knowing the facts. And I think it's really, I think it's our responsibility as media members to not speculate without knowing what exactly transpired and why. I think it's fair to surmise that the Celtics didn't take this lightly. They brought in an external law firm. They conducted an investigation for a month and a half, 2 months, you know, but we don't know exactly what constitutes consensual and what, sorry, let me rephrase that. We don't know whether this constitutes a consensual relationship or not. And we just don't know. What we know is very little. We know that they brought in a law firm. We know that for, you know, the investigation took roughly 2 months or so. We know that Udoka has not protested the suspension or objected to it in any way. You know, those are the only real knowable facts that we have. As far as who leaked to who, when, I can't speculate that. I wouldn't. I just don't know. I can't speak to that.
Yeah, and I know you don't want to get too deep into the reporting and how that's been handled by who and what, but I do find this interesting in how it, in what it says really about sports media today, because in many ways this was covered almost like a trade or a transaction of some sort, like bits and pieces coming out. Every story is just sort of one small part of this much bigger story, even the initial announcement of it. Now, this was going to come out at some point or another, I'd imagine. So it's not like you can expect that the Celtics were going to keep it airtight and show up on training camp and there was going to be no coach and no reporter would know that and there'd be no leak whatsoever. But the way in which it just kind of leaked out, I think drove a lot of, what you said, the speculation about consensual, not consensual, and people's perception of whether this was a fair suspension or not, and even how the team handled this. Like, that just sort of drove everything from that point on, you know, how it was characterized in small bits and pieces of reporting.
Yeah, here's what I'll say about leaks. Without commenting on this specific one, leaks generally. Leaks happen for a reason. They happen in almost all cases to benefit someone or something. It's an attempt to frame a story. It's up to you as a journalist or me to take a look at a leak and say, why am I getting this leak? Is this an accurate representation of a story? Okay. And it's also incumbent upon us not necessarily run with the leak without doing any sort of follow-up work. Right. And I'm not talking about specifically about anyone. I'm just saying generally. So if I get a tip or something, okay, part of my job is to filter that tip and follow up on it and say, okay, is this, you know, you're telling me X, is X actually true? And how do I use X to get more information before running with it and putting it out there into the world? We have seen, for example, ESPN reporters like Adam Schefter get in trouble for not following up. You know, for not for just running with the first tip that he gets. And so I don't know exactly what happened with Ime Udoka. I'm just saying, generally speaking, leaks almost always happen for a reason. It's an attempt to frame the story. It's an attempt to drive the narrative. You know, And so in a lot of these, when you see anonymous sources, you know, in any story, you know, I think you have to ask yourself, okay, why is this anonymous? Who does it help? Who does this particular leak help? You know, and our job as reporters are to add nuance and do follow-up reporting on that. So that's kind of my general thought on leaks. I mean, again, I'm not going to go into specifically who leaked what to whom here, because I just don't know. I can't speak to any of that. You know, we all have theories, right? But we just don't know.
And you know, you've covered different areas of, you know, politics, a bunch of different stuff. We've always known that NBA and sports reporting works a little bit differently. I mean, the stakes are typically lower. You know, I think there's almost become a lower expectation for the reporting standards that go on here. Does this story specifically call into question how we do things? Like, so much of the NBA reporting is driven anonymously and through relationships. And, you know, I think we've even come to expect some level of spin based on who's got who, you know, who's indebted to who source-wise here. Like, this, I think, to me, could be a moment where we start to pivot a little bit in terms of expectation, because so much of it's speed, right? You got to be first. You got to get the breaking news. You got to get it out there, even if it's incomplete. And we've always been a little bit uncomfortable with that, I think. But like I said, the stakes were low. It's trades and transactions that typically ends up being.
When you say we've been a little uncomfortable with it, I don't know who we is, because this type of reporting is really being incentivized at every single outlet. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason that the quote unquote insiders who break trades 10 seconds before everybody else finds out about it are the highest paid reporters often at the big networks. Right. There's a reason for that. Right. So clearly there isn't that much discomfort at the highest level of the executives who are writing the checks, mm-hmm. So I don't know that necessarily that there is that much discomfort with it. And clearly fans don't care.
Yep.
You know,
fans they want it.
And even though they can just, if you just wait a minute, they'll just have it. Right. Like, fans don't care. Execs don't care. So who's the we here? And frankly, and the other thing I will say is I'm seeing more and more reporters adopt that style of reporting. I don't even call it reporting. That's, you know, whatever word you want to use, whatever. It's not journalism. It's something else. But I'm seeing more and more sports, particularly on the younger side, who are adopting that and saying, okay, I'm seeing this model of success. I know this will get me retweets. I know this will get me, you know, in the conversation and get me aggregated X, Y, and Z. So I'm seeing, I don't know. I actually think that the people who are uncomfortable with that style of, you know, information handouts, I think that's in the minority, actually, if anything.
Fair. So what matters here, right? There's so many aspects to this story. There's the gossip, entertainment side, there's the sports side to this, and then of course there's a real story with, I guess, potential victims here, depending on what actually went down. Everyone's called for transparency, even the Celtics players, which was super interesting yesterday. Like, they almost seemed like sympathetic to the media in the room at media day, saying, all right, you guys don't know what's going on, we don't either. What did the Celtics owe? They don't owe anyone anything, but what should we expect the Celtics to be answering at this point in time? Because they can hide behind pretty much everything with that line of privacy, right? And some of it's probably true from a legal standpoint. I'm sure there's probably some things that they could say that maybe just don't reflect well on them.
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question because we don't know what happened. We don't know what team policies he violated. We don't know. So for example, in the NBA, if you are injured and you miss time, the CBA is such that there are certain types of injuries that the NBA can release publicly and say, hey, Derrick Rose is out for 6 to 8 weeks with an ankle injury, right? Okay, yep. That's negotiated with the CBA, that the players have agreed it was okay. I don't believe that's the case for, say, COVID vaccination status. Hey, I'm missing the game because I have COVID. Okay. So there are rules about this stuff. As far as what we should expect from the Celtics, I can't answer that because we don't know what team policies are violated here. You know, we don't know how many, you know, people are involved, how many parties are involved. It's, you're right, they can hide behind privacy a lot, but the privacy rules exist for a reason. You know, they exist, you know, to protect employees on some level, you know. And yes, and by the way, HR exists to protect the company as well. So you're right. As far as what we can expect from the Celtics, I know this is a frustrating answer, but I just don't know, because we don't know what has gone on here. I don't know whether there will be updated reporting as to like what happened here. We know there was at least one team staffer involved, right? Maybe the team staffer goes public. But who's to say, let's for the sake of conversation, say it was a team staff. Who's to say the team staffer didn't request to the higher ups that this be kept private? You know, and if that's the case, then well, maybe the Celtics are trying to do right by the staffer who's affected by this. You know, we just don't know. There's so many uncertainties. I also don't know, because this is such an HR issue, how much transparency a private company owes to the public, even if several of its employees are forward facing.
Yeah, for sure. And the tough part about it from our coverage standpoint is that we just have to sit on that, right? Like there's not a lot we can ask the Celtics if they're not going to answer questions. And there's plenty of damage being done to Udoka's reputation, maybe fairly, maybe unfairly in this case. Again, we don't know. And it's tough to be fair with that. You know, I think that's like sort of what I'm looking at here. Like, is this a fair suspension?
As I think about it, the one question I have to your, you know, what can we expect? The one thing I am curious about, to say a minimum, is that why he wasn't fired versus a suspension. Mm-hmm. That's the one question that I feel like there should be a little bit of transparency on, you know, because why the suspension versus a firing? What's the upside?
Along with in the statement saying his future is unclear beyond the year. So again, that, like, it doesn't seem promised that he'll be coming back after the suspension. So is this just a legal holdup? Is this sort of a compromise with players to kind of get them on the same page? Like, these are a lot of the questions I have too, because you're right.
And I think that the question of like, okay, what if the Celtics like win the championship this year? So are you going to say, okay, Ime, sorry, you're the coach again. You know, like, what is that? Like, what's the, cause there's no, I find it hard to believe that that would happen. Right. And so that's one of those I'm a little confused by, you know, and maybe you're right. Maybe if it is, maybe it's a legal holdup. Maybe it is, and maybe that's why they're not talking about it. But again, like with many things regarding the situation, we just don't know.
Yeah, and then you start making a lot of assumptions from there. It's like, if there's cause, you probably could fire him. If there isn't, maybe this wasn't handled well. I don't know. Like, it, there's a lot we just have to speculate on here, which is tough when you're doing a podcast. For the players, their reaction yesterday, I'm sure you saw it. A lot of them confused, a lot of them frustrated. What do you think that says about how this is going to go for the Celtics here this season? They certainly seem to respect Joe Mazzulla, who's going to be the interim. All of Udoka's staff is in place. I'm not sure much is going to change from a strategic standpoint. And the roster, save for Robert Williams, who's injured, is back and upgrade with Malcolm Brogdon. There's still going to be high expectations here. But it's hard to not wonder what the impact of this is going to be on this team's psyche, particularly when Ime was such an important voice for them last year in terms of turning around the season after that horrible start.
I sound like a broken record. We don't know. But with that being said, look, these guys are professional basketball players, man. Like you got to, you know, stuff happens. You know, in and you're a professional basketball player, you got to go out and play. It's the job, you know, and I hesitate to say that a coach, this is a finals ready team. We know that because they went to the finals last year, right? It's hard to say that I think that, they're no longer a finals ready team because Udoka's not the coach, you know. This is a team that's gone to the conference final several times in the last decade with a bunch of the same players. You know, as far as it shouldn't affect the psyche of the team. They should have chemistry. There's a lot of continuity from last year. They seem to like each other. If they don't make the finals, maybe it'll be coaching, but we don't know what kind of, look, Ime Udoka was a rookie head coach last year. He took him to the finals. Who's to say another rookie head coach isn't going to do that? A. B, the bigger concerns for the Celtics, I think, are less coaching and more health. Like Robert Williams missing 3 months of the season. And with Robert Williams, we never know if 3 months is actually 3 months or is actually 6 months, right? Is it 3 months when he comes back and he's playing hurt for the rest of the year? Like what do we, like it, he's been a significant injury risk for most of his career, right? Does losing Gallo, Robert Williams, you know, does Sam Hauser, you know, fill some of the, you know, how much of the hole does Sam Hauser fit? Are the Celtics going to regret not picking up like a Boogie Cousins or Dwight Howard or Carmelo or, you know, Blake Griffin? You know, are they going to regret? Oh, and they haven't been signed, so I guess they'll always be able to go back to them, right? So to me,
or Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, to me, personnel is always the biggest hangup, and not to like, I mean, look, I haven't played on NBA floor, so I'm sure there are players that are like, you know, you don't understand, like this stuff matters. But like when Frank Vogel got hired to run the Lakers, you know, to coach LeBron and AD, it's not like he was known as some coaching savant. You know, like Doc Rivers, the year before the Celtics won the championship in 2008, like people were showing up to arenas with paper bags over their heads to get Doc fired.
Yep.
And then Doc wins a championship. And then his reputation since then is still pretty sterling. In fact, in spite of the fact that he's had a lot of playoff flameouts since then. All my point is that we don't know much about coaching. You know, we don't. We know, like, from an outside on how to judge coaching. You know what I mean? What we do know is kind of like the black and white wins and losses. The first half of last year, people were saying that Udoka was on the hot seat. So we just don't know how to predict coaching, how it's going to really affect teams, you know, how it's going to go. I mean, you look at like Brad Stevens, right? Brad Stevens had a really strong reputation as a coach before he got to the NBA, when he got to the NBA. He never won a ring. I'm not saying that he's not a good – I'm saying that his reputation was higher than like – you know, Vogels, who won a championship, you know? And so I don't think we do a good job judging coaches externally.
It is interesting because if you were going to name the number one coach in the league right now, probably would still be Greg Popovich, right? And he might have the worst team in the league this year.
I have a lot of thoughts about this because coaching, I think in this quote unquote star power empowerment, star player empowerment era, I think has come to matter a lot less. Mm-hmm. Think about this. Like, I don't think you'll ever see another Pop, Phil Jackson, or Steve Kerr again. I don't think you'll see, I shouldn't say never, but I think it's a lot rarer to see coaches with tenure in the league in the way that there used to be, right? Like if you think about it, I mean, Tyronn Lue getting fired, I think like a year after he won one of the most amazing championships in the history of the sport. Frank Vogel, similar situation. Rick Carlisle, you know, built the program in Dallas, then was pushed out. I mean, it used to be that if you have a championship, you know, pedigree, you pretty much get to write your own ticket as a coach. That's no longer the case, I don't think. Unless you're Steve Kerr and Pop and Spo are probably the only two in the whole NBA that can say that at this point. You know, I just think the relationship between players and coaches has really, really changed. It's way more about ego management than I think X's and O's at this point.
Yeah, and it depends on the organization. You probably throw Eric Spoelstra in that category of someone who's inseparable from his franchise at this point, regardless of what the personnel is. And, you know, he was even in place with some of the stars there, but that might have been the turning point. Like, he could have been one of the last guys who I think in the way you're describing it, almost like staff members below the stars of a team. I mean, think of the Nets. It's unbelievable what happened with the Nets. Kenny Atkinson rebuilds that team. He's doing great. First year, they're injured. There aren't huge expectations, but he's still ousted, sort of at the behoovement of the stars, it felt like. And Steve Nash comes in with no coaching experience. And the stars and the organization have defended him through kind of up and down results there, just because they seem comfortable with him, at least until Kevin Durant demanded he got fired this summer.
Well, I mean, Steve Nash is a good example of what I'm talking about on some level, because he had hired, he didn't even have any assistant coaching experience.
Yeah.
Right. And so what do we really know about coaching? Like why did he get hired? And I'm not saying whether he should have been or should not have been, but clearly that lack of kind of years of experience didn't bother. I mean, if you remember, there was criticism that there was like white privilege and, you know, et cetera, but is Steve Nash a good or bad coach? How do we know? How can we judge that? Because the Nets have had just terrible injuries. You had the Kyrie situation. They've had a lot of upheaval. You know, how do we actually know that, let's say, Brad Stevens, you know, is a better coach than X, Y, and Z? What's the marker? Because we're not in the practices. We don't know, you know, we don't know, you know, a lot of your team success, like 80% of it, 90% of it is based on personnel. Mm-hmm. You know, I think coaches can make the difference between like, okay, I'm going to call the right out of bounds plays. I got to get these guys motivated and playing together. We just don't know. Like, you know, I can't tell. I know Nets fans are really unhappy with Steve Nash's coach, but when I watch Nets games, I don't see anything that egregious that Nash is doing, given the lack of personnel he's had because of injuries. Like, I'm like, what am I missing that everyone else sees, you know?
And things can change drastically year to year. I mean, Tom, you've mentioned coaches that have been ousted after tremendous years. I remember George Karl, I believe, was the one who got fired after winning Coach of the Year. Wasn't that right?
For example, Sam Mitchell was another one, I think, that got fired. Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
I think Dwayne Casey got fired after winning Coach of the Year. So coaching is a really fickle thing. And here are the facts of the matter. If you're the Celtics, Ime Udoka as a rookie coach took your team to the NBA Finals. That team, in theory, improved this offseason with the addition of Brogdon and filled a big, big hole the Celtics had. They needed another playmaker. Okay, and he's a defensive-minded playmaker. Okay, so knowing that, I don't see any reason the Celtics should necessarily be like despondent about not having Udoka this year, because who's to say they can't repeat what happened last year?
Well, I think from a coverage perspective, and who knows what the impact of this was, so many of their swings did seem to be driven by Udoka's public criticism. A lot of his initiatives seemed to translate to the team. And those might continue under Mazzulla, but I think a lot of it goes back to the voice here, because did the roster change significantly from Stevens to Udoka? Yeah, Kemba, Horford, some, you know, bench role player changes happened there. And then even personnel changes happened within the year. If we look back at Josh Richardson and Dennis Schroeder and those trades, Derek White coming in. But the changes within the team had already started to happen at that point. You know, they were playing well before the trade deadline. So I think in this case, I think your point generally is true that coaching has probably become pretty overrated around the league here. But it felt like in this situation in particular, Udoka had a sizable impact on a team that was, what, a 7 seed under Stevens in his final season with basically the same core of players, Smart, Brown, and Tatum, and then was the 2 seed a year later going to the NBA Finals. And I don't like, and Joe Mazzulla at his press conference, he's not talking about X's and O's. He's talking about the messaging and the healing and the trust. So a lot of it's intangible, right? I don't think there's a whole lot of scheming and X's and O's here that people are worried about, because Mazzulla, if he's becoming a head coach, you would assume he's going to be capable on that front, or at least have capable people around him on the staff. Yeah. It's a messaging. Yeah, it's a voice. Yeah, it's a buy-in thing.
Steve Nash, his rookie year, I mean, he put D'Antoni around him, right? Like,
yep.
And he had Jacques Vaughn. I mean, Jacques Vaughn's been a long-time assistant, but I mean, that was one of the first things Steve Nash did.
You know, it's interesting, too.
I think about NBA coaching is that it's not coaching games, I think, is a part of what you do as a coach. It's also about being a public face of the team. It's also about, you know, deciding, you know, implementing concepts in practice. It's about knowing when to practice, knowing when not to practice. Mm-hmm. But here's the other thing. Like, I say that, and I think I'm going to contradict myself right now, because a lot of NBA teams are practicing less and less.
Yeah.
So maybe the game is, maybe the games are where a coach makes most of his impact.
I'll say this too, for the Celtics specifically, the rotations matter too, especially for a team here that is, as you said, bringing in Brogdon. Smart and Brogdon became a story when Brogdon came in. And I think when you take a longer look at it, they're both going to be able to play a ton here. You do probably have to make a decision on who starts, who sits. But as you said, Robert Williams is injured now, so that's minimized, especially for Missoula right now. But there'll be closing decisions too. And in the finals, Udoka sits Smart in game one down the stretch. They go on this great run in the fourth quarter. That's possibly a formula for success going forward, but it never happens again. And that's one of the toughest things I think a coach has to do in this league, is make those difficult closing lineup decisions. Who starts, who sits, that seems to matter to players, as we've seen with Jay Crowder this week. And the management of the talent on their roster, particularly deep talented rosters like the Clippers, who I think they're being overlooked in terms of all the difficult decisions they're going to have to make.
That's a bigger issue. To me, personnel's an issue, right? Like Robert Williams' health, Brogdon's been injury prone, you know, Mark Smart, you know, is gets hurt, you know, a decent amount because of his playing style. That to me, the bigger concern. Another concern is that a bunch of the league has gotten much better, right?
Cleveland
has got improved. Philly, I think, had a good offseason. You know, the Bucks get Chris Middleton back. The Clippers essentially are adding Paul George and Kawhi Leonard as free agents. The Lakers get LeBron, a healthy LeBron and Anthony Davis back, you know, in theory, knock on wood. Denver gets Jamal Murray back, you know, the list goes on and on. But the bigger thing is that the league, I think, will be a lot better, with the caveat that injuries happen all the time and there's no, you know, who knows.
Brooklyn's the biggest asterisk.
Brooklyn gets, in theory, Ben Simmons back and a healthy Durant and Irving on the floor together with no, you know, vax issues. You know, Toronto, I think, will be fully healthy. And, you know, a lot of teams are just better. Atlanta got DeJounte Murray. And so there's a lot of teams have improved. But so do the Celtics. We just don't know. And I think you also have to write in a possibility that the Celtics will have internal improvements. Like, look, you know, Marcus Smart is probably going to be better as a point guard than he was last year. I mean, last year was his first full-time year playing point guard. You should see improvement from, you know, some of the younger guys on the team. You know, maybe Grant Williams makes another jump. You know, maybe Peyton Pritchard makes another jump. And so forth and so on. So you just, it's hard to predict. I mean, but I do think the biggest threat to the Celtics, it's not the head coach. It's availability and the rest of the league just catching up to them. Hey, Bobby, you're muted. Sorry, say it again. I think I lost you there for a second. Nope, lost you there. There you go. Now I got you. Got you back. There you go.
I'm back.
Yeah.
So, what are you most looking forward to this NBA season? You talk about a lot of the improvements around the league, a lot of stars coming back. The Celtics certainly are going to be contenders here in some way or another. What do you think is the biggest story going into this NBA season from your perspective?
The biggest story? They're a bunch of legacy. This season's a big one for legacies, I think. So, for example, in theory, LeBron will overtake Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for number one in points scored. So if LeBron overtakes Kareem, you're going to have a lot of that. I mean, you have Steph Curry and LeBron both going for ring number five. And, you know, if LeBron wins a ring, you know, that's five rings for him. you know, you have to start thinking about, okay, where is he among the Lakers pantheon? Where is he in the all-time NBA grades? Is he number one finally? The Nets are, to me, the most interesting team in the league this year because, you know, what this is probably a last dance type year for them because I don't think the Nets, I mean, who knows? But who knows? This is likely Kyrie's last year with the Nets, right? If you read the tea leaves.
Last hurrah.
And does that mean Durant's gone after this year? And what are you getting out of Ben Simmons? You know, what are you getting out of Steve Nash? You know, The Athletic reported over the summer that Kevin Durant tried to get him fired. And now they have to navigate this weird, hey, I know you tried to get me fired, but I'm still your coach. You know, it's such a weird thing, you know. The Nets are a really weird team. I'm really curious to see how that plays out. Like, they could win the finals. They might not make the playoffs. We really don't know. They're an implosion waiting to happen, or they're going to be one of the best teams assembled over the last 5-10 years. So they're also healthy in a way they weren't last year. They get Joe Harris back, and you have a couple possible reclamation stories with Ty Warren and then, you know, Seth Curry's going to be healthy. You know, Joe Harris. Yeah. List goes on and on. I just, it's a really interesting, I think that's a really interesting team to watch, but just like every year, man, the NBA is a legacy league. It's all about star legacies. And I'm interested to see how they burst themselves. Like James Harden, man, like if James Harden doesn't play well again, not that he played bad last year, but he lost
100 pounds.
I saw that, you know, but James Harden's playoff performances, his playoff history leaves a lot to be desired. And if he doesn't again, if he kind of flops again in the playoffs, you know, what does that mean for his legacy? But also what is it? Should the Sixers run that back? You know, same for Joel Embiid, you know, let me see how old Joel Embiid is now. Joel Embiid is 28 years old.
You know, hasn't gone past the second round, right?
And Joel Embiid's also, you know, he's a big man who has injury history.
Every year, almost.
Yeah, how many years of elite play do you have left out of Joel Embiid? Because there are certain players, I'm looking at Kemba Walker, I'm looking at, you know, Blake Griffin, I'm looking at, you know, so that really hit a really sharp decline once they get to 31, 32. So you wonder how many years of peak Joel Embiid you have left. They're players that I'm just excited to watch because I just love watching them play, like Jokic. I love big men that can pass. I love Giannis, you know. I love watching, you know, 6'10", 6'11" guys that are like throwing behind the back passes.
And you hope all those guys stay healthy this year. Last year seemed particularly bad on the injury front. It was like Durant misses half the year, Simmons out all season, for different reasons, but you have Murray, as you mentioned, Michael Porter pretty much missed the entire year. Zion showed up with the broken foot and never played. I'm excited to see him back out there. Did you catch the Simmons interview on JJ Redick's podcast?
Oh, yes, I did.
So we're talking Nets. What did that say to you about his future?
I think there were a lot of follow-ups someone had asked because – I mean, I didn't, it doesn't seem like, I didn't get a sense of whether he feels, I mean, like JJ at one point asked him, hey, are you gonna shoot more threes? And he's like, oh, well, I gotta, but there's other stuff I can do. And I couldn't tell if he was joking or not.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a good sense of whether Ben Simmons is going to change his game at all, or whether he feels like he needs to, whether he feels like any of the criticism leveled against him over the last couple of years is legitimate. Like I didn't have a good sense that he has looked in the mirror at all about how the last couple of years went in Philly.
Yeah. Cause a lot of the conversation there was two sided, right? It was, they were joking around about some of the mishaps a little bit, particularly the passed up dunk. But then they started making excuses for it too, even though he accepted that it didn't look good on the camera there. So
yeah,
it sort of reflected.
I wish we got a better sense of
what
happened, and really kind of went line by line about some of the stuff that was said about him. What happened in the spring when he didn't come back for the Celtics series. But again, obviously he needed back surgery. Like that's a pretty serious thing.
Yeah, right? He said he couldn't move morning. Yeah.
And so, okay, but then the question is, why did the Nets think you were coming back? You know, because they were pretty, because the support of Simmons from Steve Nash, it was kind of tepid a little bit about why he wasn't playing. Oh, well, we thought, you know. And so, okay, how did that make you feel? And I just wish there was a little bit more, it went a little bit more in depth. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, with Ben Simmons, look, we're going to see. We're going to see what his game is like when he comes back. We're going to see, you know, we're going to see. It's hard to know what you're getting out of him. And the funny thing is, I don't actually know if you need him to shoot threes. Like, if you play Ben Simmons in a lineup with Kyrie, a great three-point shooter, Kevin Durant, exceptional three-point shooter, Harris, exceptional three-point shooter, and, you know, I don't know, you can either go small or you can, you know, start Seth Curry and just go Durant at the five, which probably you don't want, but you know, you could start Claxton, right, at the five. Maybe you don't need him to shoot with three great shooters around you.
There's so many questions there. Yeah, because he fits in on this team on paper, and that's what I thought. The trade made a lot of sense because of that. Like, he just seems, for all the reasons you said, to be an ideal fit there. But you're playing him and Claxton together. I think the last time we saw Claxton, he went 1-for-11 on the free throw line. So you have two guys who can't hit a free throw. He's never had a play center, realistically, playing next to Embiid his whole career. Simmons, that is.
Yeah.
He's not the point guard on this team.
I don't think that he can – I don't think that he can play center full-time. I'm not saying
yeah.
You can play a small ball. I mean, the question that Steve Nash is going to have to answer is, okay, is Kyrie effective off the ball? You know, because Kyrie, like, one of his best attribute is his ball handling and his ability to break down off the dribble. So then, you know, how does that affect the team if defenses are sagging off Ben, right, to guard Kyrie, to double up on Kyrie or Kevin or whatever? So I think we're going to find out. But, you know, Simmons is also an excellent cutter. He's excellent getting to the rim. Once he gets into that paint area, he's really strong. He can post up. He can do a lot of stuff. And so we'll see.
So, Sopan, you have a new book out. I want to talk to you about that next time we get you back here. But I want to shout out as well to, you know, whoever's watching here. I haven't had the chance to read your second book yet. I love Mistranslations, your first book, memoir, novel. It was amazing. One of my favorite books I've ever read. I'm excited to read this follow-up. Tell everybody a little bit about Akia Das's second act.
Thanks so much. Yeah. So it's my debut novel. It's based on this, a lot of my own upbringing, but it's basically about the splintered Bengali family in New Jersey that is split apart by grief, by how they treated their teenage daughter who has passed away. And they aim to come together when they find a play that she has written and that before she died, and they try to stage the play without knowing anything about theater. And it's a way of coming together, and it's about the changing power of art. And I'm really excited about it. I'm glad it's out there in the world, that people are getting to read it. And, you know, I love being able to create this universe that the family lives in. And I'm also a big theater fan, so I like to be able to indulge my love of theater.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't read Mistranslations either, that, like, the way you dove into your family for that year, whatever that was there, and, you know, going out to India and meeting your father, that was one of, like, just the most heartwarming stories ever. And I just love that book. Like, it was one of those ones that just sucked me in page for page. And I could probably go back and even read it again and enjoy it again. So
thank you, Bobby. I really appreciate
you putting your life out in the world and sharing it with everybody. Couple of our sponsors before we get out of here. Appreciate you being here, Sopan. We have AG1. Go over there, athleticgreens.com/gardening. Get a year's supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs when you make your first purchase, and we'll send you our official Garden Report t-shirt. Phenomenal. And we, of course, are brought to you by Calm. Head over to calm.com/garden. Get 40% off a premium subscription when you sign up over there. So, Ben, appreciate you being here. Hopefully we'll have you back soon. Go read him in the New York Times. Anything good coming over there?
I'm sure they will be. We're not hard to find, so.
Appreciate it, So, Ben. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bobby. All right, man. Take care.
Yeah.